Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So Catherine and I are in the pub and we have smuggled our way downstairs into the quiet room that we don't actually know whether it is legal to be in, but we're in it, Catherine.
I can tell you that this is where on Tuesday nights they hold their Dungeons and Dragons evening.
We've had this conversation
before. We've dodged a bullet, yeah.
Yeah, I remember us being here some months ago and you revealed the Dungeons and Dragons information and we still haven't actually come out for a night out with Dungeons and Dragons, which is all a bit disappointing. However, here we are and it's WTA Finals Day 2.
Podcast three.
I'm getting a little bit carried away. I have had one beer already. I'm on my second one. And
he's had one sip of beer number two,
and
folks.
I've just come from the official drinks of somebody very important involved in the Queen's Club tournament, the Fevertree Championships. The event director, Emma Foster, who I've worked with for a decade, has just left. She's left me in the lurch. So basically, I've had a beer with her. And that's where I've been tonight.
It was an obligation beer.
Yeah. Well, I quite enjoyed it. Actually, you say that, and she'll be much missed. And she is a big part of why that tournament has done well over the last 10 years.
Yeah,
and the rest of the time, I've been commentating on live tennis this morning. I mean,
I've been listening to you commentate on live tennis, not this morning, it was all afternoon.
Feels like a long time ago. but basically, we've had today Karolina Pliskova against Elena Svitolina, won by Svitolina in straight sets, but it feels like three sets.
Yes, because it was all about the first set tiebreak won by Svitolina 14-12.
Correct.
And justly won by Svitolina because I think she had seven set points to Pliskova's one.
Yes.
So if she hadn't won that set, goodness me, that would have taken some coming back from. And actually, in commentary, you said, Chwanky Othervong, I've always wondered with tennis players, when you lose a set like that, how on earth do you come back from it? And sort of there was a long pause and she sort of went, well, it's best of three sets. but of course, as she was saying that, she was looking at a court on which Karolina Pliskova was kind of grumbling from the devastation of having lost that first set tiebreak.
Nobody's ever actually managed to give me a decent answer to that question about how tennis players recover from losing a devastating set.
I think the answer is sort of wafty stuff about staying present and staying in the moment and taking one point at a time. The sort of stuff that journalists roll their eyes at and just think, oh.
Basically, I think tennis players are just as devastated as the rest of us would be, but they haven't really got any choice other than to just crack on with it, have they? But that's what impresses me so much about the best players. I saw Ash Barty the other day, and day one she lost was it 7-5 set or the first set 7-6, I can't remember. It was a very close set. She lost in her opener against Belinda Bencic, and then within 4 minutes it was 3-love to Barty in the second set, and I was looking at Barty thinking, how has she done that? How has she reset that quickly and turned this around? I mean, I remember...
Mindfulness.
That's
what Andreescu would say.
A number of years ago, I stood in the locker room at Queen's, and I think we were on the screen was a really close tiebreak, and it's one of those tiebreaks where all the players end up gathering around the TV that are in there waiting for their match to go on. And they're all watching it, and they're all sort of saying, where's he going to serve now? He's going out wide, etc., etc. And it ends up about 12-10. And at the end of it, I asked my normal question. How on earth does the bloke who's lost the set deal with it without going completely crazy? And all of the players just sort of looked at me as if I was just the only one in the room that didn't know.
But could they actually articulate the answer?
Colin Fleming had a go.
And?
And he, yeah, he came out with the wafty stuff.
About 1 point at a time.
1 point at a time. I mean, no offence, Colin, and I love you to bits, but, you know.
But that's, yeah, that's why clichés are clichés, aren't they? Because there's some truth in them, but it...
But 14-12 is a
quote worthy.
Is a proper sickener, isn't it? And I mean,
and she did so well to hang tough because it was Svitolina piling on the pressure. And I, you know, I kept on. I don't know. Pliskova keeps on. Maybe it's because I've been burned predictions wise by Pliskova so many times. She's flattered to deceive so many times. But I keep sort of waiting for her to not quite choke, because I don't think she's as volatile as that, but just waiting for her to crumble a little at the sides. And I was very impressed with her resilience, but she was just outplayed, I think. She was made to look awkward and too often uncomfortable by Svitolina. And I know that, you know, movement is never going to be the best part of her game. It's always going to be a relative weakness, but it did look exposed. I thought today she too often looked really quite uncomfortable. And we were having a chat with Mary Carrillo on WhatsApp this week about just musing, or well, she was musing and we were sort of just in awe of everything she was saying.
I'm still getting,
just nodding along.
I'm going, still getting over the we were having a WhatsApp conversation with Mary.
I can sort of only respond to her in GIFs because I have nothing verbally to contribute. She was musing on player coach relationships and how you divide up your time between improving your strengths and between adding to your strengths and improving your weaknesses, and how that changes over the course of a career. You know, there must come a point where a player just has to accept their weaknesses and just think, right, I'm gonna just play to my strengths and make them as good as they can be. I don't know, but it feels to me like Pliskova's weaknesses maybe become a bit more of a weakness, but then she still qualified in second, didn't she? It's only really at the Grand Slams that she's flattered to deceive.
She is number two in the world.
She doesn't feel like number two in the world.
She doesn't feel like number two in the world, and therefore I feel that the biggest weakness is in her lack of aura and her lack of conviction when it really matters. The fact that you're sitting there thinking, waiting for it not to happen for her.
Imagine. But maybe I'm being unfair with that. Because
well, where's the evidence? Where is the evidence that Karolina Pliskova...
Two.
Where is the evidence that on the biggest stage, Karolina Pliskova delivers? Four titles this year, but no final of the Grand Slam this year, despite being world number two, and never gone beyond the semis here at the WTA Finals.
Yeah, and that's double faults becoming an increasing issue. I mean, I don't want to be all negative on her because she made it a really good match today, and she didn't play badly at all. There were moments when she was breathtaking, but I think there are issues there.
I think she, on paper, if somebody were to offer me a coach for her, I would have gone with Conchita Martinez. So, and when you hear what she has to say to her, I think that's as good as it's going to get.
I agree, but she doesn't get her pumped up, Martinez. So if you're talking about somebody that needs to needs to create aura, maybe she needs like a hype man.
What,
or woman.
Are you saying I'm in with a chance?
Do you know what I mean, though? So ditch the tactics, just hype.
It's going to be fine, Karolina. Come on now. Let's get the beers in.
Do you know what I mean?
I believe in you. That sort of thing. Well, I mean, the thing is, she looked...
I can't think of a coach that actually fits that.
Throughout lots of it, she looked exhausted. And look, you can understand it to some degree. I think she's played 60-odd matches, 65 matches this year. It is a lot. But when you're 27, you're meant to be peaking for the biggest events, really, aren't you? When you're that's the peak of your career.
And she hasn't got an exhausting style of play.
She's not doing the hard yards
that Svitolina is.
I thought Svitolina was going to win the match all the way through.
Yeah, me too.
Part of that is because of the surface of the court. And, you know, we are looking at...
It is slow, isn't it?
We are looking at a court, and Pliskova got a retaliation in early with that "it's very slow" line the other day.
She's right.
And Andrew Bettel's backed that up yesterday, and Nigel Sears was talking about how if you scrape your knuckle over the surface of the court, it's like sandpaper, which sounds quite painful, doesn't it? I can see by your grimace. But the fact is that the surface is suiting those players. It suited Barty, who's the French Open champion. I know she can play under the stuff as well, but players are struggling to hit through it. We'll talk about Halep finding a way past Andreescu in a little while, but it is suiting these players who can extend rallies and run and keep them going and make you miss and make you try to hit through them. Kvitova couldn't do it against Osaka.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you could see Pliskova not quite... I mean, there were a couple of bailouts in rallies, but you could see her reaching the point in rallies where she just thought, oh, I've not got a hope here. I don't win rallies like this, so how about a drop shot?
She was doing a few drop shots. But I'm impressed with Svitolina. The way that she... I mean, I'm still amused the way that she and Halep react to on-court coaching compared to the way Andreescu carries herself, for instance. You know, they desperately want to be negative in the conversation, and you can hear them say, nothing's working. Why do I keep missing that forehand on the line? And you got Andrew Bettel saying, I don't mind that one. That one's all right. I don't mind you missing that
one. I mind it, though.
That's exactly what
Totally what I would say.
Darren Cahill spoke for 2 solid minutes of the most uplifting, sensible stuff I've ever heard.
So there was as much Darren Cahill in that match as there was either of the players. 4 times was he on?
And she just said, I'm not playing solid. That was all she said. Oh, dear. Fantastic.
Yeah, we've missed Darren Cahill on court coaching, haven't we?
But just to come back to Svitolina quickly, I mean, she hasn't reached a final all year. She's reached 2 semi-finals of slams.
Has made the breakthrough at slams.
Yeah,
but you'd still call it a breakthrough year for her, or I would.
Yes, I would agree. I think kind of feel like it's the year she needed, and it's the year off the back of the victory at the WTA finals last year, which was in itself another step up. I still don't know whether she has another step in her, because some of that relies on her opponents, and there are bigger hitters, there are more inspirational players out there who, as much as Andrew was saying, you know, we've been working on her playing big hitters in the biggest moments when they bring it out, I'm not sure whether Svitolina will have that other gear.
Yeah, I feel like we have seen and are seeing the best Alina Svitolina. I don't think she has that many more. I don't think she has any other gears to reach. She'll still have good days and bad days like anyone else. But I think the Alina Svitolina that reached those Grand Slam semi-finals this year is peak Alina Svitolina. At other slams where other results go differently, that same Alina Svitolina might be good enough to reach a final or win one, because that's how sport works. But I don't feel like there's untapped potential with her. I think she's tapping it all, which is to her and Andrew Bettel's is immense credit.
That's all you want in the end, isn't it? And I feel that they should look at Halep as a player that was kind of in the same position 2 or 3 years ago and has managed to elevate herself to another level. I know she'd already reached a Grand Slam final at that point, but now here she is, she's won 2 of them, and she was brilliant today, I thought. What a match that was. I mean, the thing we remember of Svitolina and Pliskova is the 14-12 tiebreak. That kind of gave you a memory from an unmemorable match. But the moment Andreescu and Halep stepped out on that court, the place, even though there weren't that many people in because it's a weekday, but it was crackling, wasn't it? The atmosphere out there.
Yeah, and mild-mannered Simona Halep practically took the mic from Andrew Krasny in her on-court interview afterwards. He had wrapped it up and she reached over and grabbed the mic, sort of, to to request an extra moment to pay tribute to the crowd that were there, and in particular the Romanian fans. Yeah. I mean, there are Romanians everywhere. How many Romanians do you encounter day to day? Turns out they are everywhere, and they are all just bananas for Simona Halep.
She is so popular around the world, but she was categorically outplayed for the first set. It was a set of tennis that I found joyous in what Andreescu brought to it. It was like, right then, I'm here, everybody. Cancel everything else. I'm here, and this is what I do.
Did you see that WTA video on social media? They've done some really cool stuff on social media this year, actually. They did that press conference tutorial video, which was really good earlier in the year. Anyway, they had each of the players, they were being asked quickfire questions about the year in tennis. Who's won the most matches, who served the most aces, that kind of thing. And they had to try and answer them whilst also bouncing a ping pong ball on a sort of jazzy
bat. Yeah.
That sort of lit up and had a net on it. And much merriment ensued. Anyway, most of them got all of the questions pretty much right. And Andreescu got the who's won the most matches this year, and she went, me? You're injured for half of it, Bianca. You've done pretty much everything else, but and not she, that one, but in she, her head.
And the
know.
Way she came out, she played tennis as if answering me, because... And she threw the kitchen sink. She hit power. She hit drop shots. She hit slices. She hit a tweener at one point. I mean, a forward
Simona
tweener.
Simona Halep almost looked annoyed about that, didn't she?
Did
can
look
you imagine?
Annoyed.
Would she have done that against anyone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure if she can do it against Halep, who she idolises, she actually lists Halep as the player she wanted to play like when she was little. And Halep sent her congratulations to her and said that Romania is proud of you after the US Open. I mean, there's a... Obviously, she has a Romanian heritage, and she spent her formative years there after being born in Canada, and then went back as an 11-year-old to train in Canada. But it's clear over the next few years both countries are going to be effectively claiming her victories as their own. And I think that if Halep wasn't the opposition, those Romanian fans would have been going absolutely ballistic for Bianca Andreescu. But yeah, she threw everything we see in tennis at Simona Halep. She was playing counter-attacking tennis. She was playing attacking tennis. She was playing Nick Kyrgios tennis occasionally, including front-facing tweener and sort of audacious sliced forehands, really for no reason.
But all with a plan.
Yeah.
Nick Kyrgios rarely has a plan, does he? He's just... The plan is entertainment or lashing out. Everything she does is so purposeful.
His plan is discombobulation.
Yeah.
Of himself and his opponent.
Whereas her plan is just really smart tactics.
Yeah. She is a natural, instinctively tactical player. And it's a joy to watch. And she should have won today. I mean, she had 6-5, second set, match point, and a set to love. But... And credit to Halep. Halep stopped to winning. Halep hit, a clean winner on that match point.
How big a factor was the back injury? No, I don't think so much in that second set, you're right. That's the set point, the match point, Halep wrenched it away. But in the third set, it was a different player to the first, wasn't it, Andreescu?
Yeah, my sense would be that it was a significant factor, because she stopped... In Joe Jury, who I was commentating with, her words were... Unable to twist now. She can run, but she can't do those the twisting motions of if wrong-footed, get back in position and hit a powerful stroke with a two-handed backhand. But I think that definitely rocked her. But with Andreescu, it's sometimes a little difficult, I think, to tell, because she had a medical timeout for the tiniest speck of blood on her shin. I think the umpire actually enforced her to take that because they don't want blood everywhere. But
and Halep managed to get an extra sort of 3.5 minutes out of Darren Cahill during that injury timeout, so everyone's a winner.
I didn't really know that was allowed, but anyway, that happened. But the trainer came on, and I was thinking, trainer, just get a little box of plasters out and put it on and off you go. Instead, she spent 4 minutes dressing it and being very particular. Anyway.
Health and safety, innit?
Oh, okay. The back injury definitely was a factor. I think it also kept Halep on her game plan, which I suspect had been devised with the idea of you keep coming, you are relentless, you don't go away, and eventually she breaks down. Because when Andreescu was properly on, there was only one winner, but she rode out the storm.
Yeah, it was funny. The coaching input that that Halep had from Cahill, maybe it was during that injury timeout, midway through the second set, or towards the latter stages of the second set. And I think she might actually have been a breakdown at the time, certainly down in the score, maybe 4-2 or 4-3 down, Halep. And his parting words to her were, 7 minutes, Simona, you could have this set won in 7 minutes. Don't think of this as this big ship you've got to turn around. Think of it as playing great tennis for the next 7 minutes. And after that, the match will look totally different. And I found that really relatable, really interesting, digestible coaching nuggets.
Yeah, me too. I shall remember that. We'll use that.
Because sometimes it can feel like a mountain to climb.
Yeah.
Maybe Pliskova needed a bit of that. Don't think of it as this monumental thing to get over, losing that heartbreaking first set and now having to win 2 out of 2 sets. Just think about it as this whole match could look totally different in 7 minutes' time.
Yeah. So that means now that Halep has won that match, we have the two winners, isn't it, who play against each other in each group. So where does that leave us for tomorrow? We've got Tuesday, Ash Barty against Naomi Osaka is the match. That's a good match, isn't it? On paper, that is a good match.
Yes.
And then Petra Kvitova against Belinda Bencic, and we wait to see whether Bencic is going to be able to play fully fit after the foot injury I think she had taped up, didn't she? Let's just have a quick look at the old Osaka against Barty head-to-head. And then on Wednesday, we've got the two winners playing each other first.
Halep Svitolina, which is always great.
Yeah, that's often a good match. And then Pliskova against Andreescu is the second match that's going to be played there. So, Barty against Osaka, the head-to-head.
So, Barty lost to Kvitova in Australia, didn't she? Not Osaka, so they didn't play there.
She called her a cool chick, didn't she?
Who doesn't she call a cool chick? Who doesn't she think is a cool chick?
She hasn't called me a cool chick yet.
I feel like they've played quite recently and it was really good. Can't place when it was.
Beijing,
there we go.
And it was Ash Barty winning in the final. 3-6, 6-3, 6-2.
Oh, God, if Matt were here, it wouldn't have taken that long, would it? God.
No, it wouldn't. 2018, they played twice as well. Australian Open, Barty won 4-2. I remember that one.
Yes.
And Nottingham, Osaka won on grass, 3-4. So
that's a surprise result, isn't it?
Yeah, 4 matches, 2 apiece. Who's winning? Oh dear, I think Barty, but then I've got Barty going all the way.
I had Bencic going all the way, which is not aging well, and I was really impressed with Barty against Bencic, so I'm talking myself into Barty here.
Okay. And Svitolina and Halep, well, we'll talk about that tomorrow because we've got another show tomorrow.
Right.
Loads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. To come. Just to wrap up Vienna and Basel from yesterday, which did indeed go as we thought it might go when Matt and I were talking when it was... I think we started the podcast when it was 0-0, and then we ended it with it Federer leading
0-0.
Love all.
What podcast is this?
I've spent 40 years describing my team's results as 0-0, so there we are. But no, when Matt and I were talking, it hadn't barely started, and when we finished it, Federer was three games away from victory, and he duly wrapped them up. And then we saw some real emotion from him, didn't we? I mean, he was teary-eyed throughout that presentation. And there was the moment where the announcer just read out what he'd achieved, that it was his 10th Basel title. And there was a little shake of the head of how has that happened on his face. I was talking on the show last night about... He's been playing that event for 21 years and he was a ball boy there, and he was giving out the medals. They have that lovely tradition of giving medals out to all the ball kids, and he got given one by Michael Stich, and here he was giving them all out. And seeing him tearing up like that was a lovely moment, really.
Yeah, I'm very affected by Roger Federer tears, as documented on this podcast over the years. Yeah, it was really emotional. Do you think he'll retire there? I'm not saying when. Don't want to get into the when will Roger Federer retire business. Do you think it will be there?
I think he probably will. Yeah. I think that would be a good shout. And I think next year could be it.
Mm. I think so too. But that's not for the last 5 minutes of a daily pod.
We
but
put it
yeah,
out there.
I think you could be right.
Okay.
Dimonor didn't even play badly. Just footnote. 2-2.
The match point was hilarious. The way Federer just sort of marauded forward and kind of ignored Dimonor's ground strokes.
But that was the story of the match. He was really hitting sweetly.
He's just
Dimonor, and Federer was like, whatever.
Well, just go away.
Yeah.
All right, who are you anyway?
You are a child. Go to bed.
Vienna, Dominic Thiem, similarly emotional, seeing him on his knees in victory at the tournament he'd always... You know, we talked about Kitschbühel being one of you always wanted to win.
I thought Kitschbühel was the one, Dominic.
That's old news.
You're not allowed two ones.
No, he's won that one. And I think, I may live to regret this, but I think we have seen a major moment for Dominic Thiem. I think we are going to see another level from him.
I really hope so, because that match against Diego Schwartzman, who also, footnote, played brilliantly, was breathtaking. I could watch Dominic Thiem play that tennis every day for the rest of my life. It was astonishing. There's nothing... Not much comes close to that in tennis, seeing Dominic Thiem... in full flow, hitting feet off the ground, blocked into out single-handed backhands. Not even having time for the full whip. I mean, it was just... my eyes were boggling out of my head.
Jojo told me she tells off her students if they hit shots with their feet off the ground because they're pointless, which really amused me.
Right.
There you go. It's just showboating, isn't it? But it's, if you're dominant team and you're hitting clean winners, you can do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to tell Joe Drury how to do coaching, but it looked blooming effective to me.
It just looked cool, let's be honest.
I mean, yeah, it was the sort of tennis that makes you gasp.
Yeah.
And yet still with a bit of margin for error in it. I know you're going to have bad days with that style of play, but it didn't look like he was absolutely redlining to me. It did in terms of power. I think he was hitting it as hard as he could. But in terms of placement and clearance over the net, there was margin for error in there.
If he just has a little thing to himself now and schedules his year right next year.
What does he want?
Yeah. Is it now.
Just to hit tennis balls
now,
as hard as he can?
If he thinks to himself, I've won Kitzbühel in Vienna, tick, tick, right, that's done.
He's already committed to Kitzbühel next year.
That's fine. It's okay. You can have it. A lap of honour is fine. But he needs to mentally...
Well, he's not playing the Olympics.
He needs to mentally commit to winning big on the biggest stage next year. That's the priority. And I think...
I would love him to just, in his mind, write off the French Open. What happens there is a bonus, whatever.
What happens in Paris stays in Paris.
Yeah, I mean, Rafael Nadal's still around. Not saying I can't win it, I don't want to win it, but just think,
why can't
whatever.
He win the Australian Open?
Yeah, I would love him to think... French Open aside, what do I want from next year? I want to win the Australian Open and just come out like he's been a caged animal for the off-season. I know there's still the O2 and they're not at the Davis Cup finals, are they? Don't think Austria are there. David's checking. But yeah, I would love to see him come out like a ravenous beast and just say, Australian Open, I'm coming for you. I'm good enough to win this now on hard courts. I'm coming for it. That's what I want to see.
That would be good. Okay.
And I want to see feet off the ground, single-handed into our backhands, always, every point.
Okay. I'll have a word. See if I can. Who knows Dominic Thiem? Anybody out there? We'll see if we can have a word. Right then. So that's all going to happen. Dominic Thiem had his 9-match singles winning streak in Davis Cup play snapped, but yeah. Austria won the final match to pull out a 3-2 win over Finland in their group.
Yeah, but that was when he lost to that bloke that we've never heard of.
Yeah, well, they still managed to figure it out. Finland's Emil Ruusuvuori, ranked 163 in the world, beat Thiem 6-3, 6-2. But anyway, apparently Austria still managed to qualify.
Right, so he's still got O2 Davis Cup. All right.
To help Austria advance to February's Davis Cup qualifiers. So no, not
no.
Davis.
Okay, good. I didn't think so.
I bet you're glad you're listening to this show. Folks, in the pub, as I drink my beer. And that's the point at which we're going to end the tennis podcast, Catherine. Is there anything else that I'm forgetting?
No.
What else is there in life?
I've documented all the single-handed in-to-out feet off the ground backhands that I need to for today, but I hope to see more tomorrow.
Okay, well, we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph after the WTA Finals group matches have completed. We've run you through what they are. We'll be coming to you with another show after those have finished. Executive produced by tennisballs.com with our mascot Rhea with the Y. Leave us a review on iTunes immediately. Also, tell everybody you know about the Tennis Podcast, because this one's not been quite so bad as the other one from a few days ago, so don't mind you telling people about this one. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, all that jazz, and sign up to our newsletter by scanning down on your phone in your show notes and clicking subscribe. You'll get a newsletter to your phone every week and daily at the Grand Slams. Right, Catherine, see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.